space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of Starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Oh, let's drag on and do this.
And we're here to talk about the very last episode of Discovery, Life Itself. But before we do that, we do have a tiny bit of Trek news.
Well, it's coming in thick and fast. I swear they do this in time for our show now.
Well, that's it.
Well, it's better than they used to do, because they used to put it out at 7 o'clock just after we finished. Yeah.
They're like, this series, we're going to apologize to you guys. We're going to make sure we do the announcement before it comes up. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
We do appreciate being able to do Trek News when it's sort of straight away.
Yeah. So the Trek News this week is as a special birthday present to Admiral Elliot.
It is a special birthday present.
Netflix are going to drop Prodigy season 2 on the 1st of July. What they've not said is whether it will be the whole season or whether they'll do it weekly. My feeling is it will probably be all in one go, because that's how Netflix tends to do things.
Not everything they do, but and they did when they had Discovery, they did that weekly.
No,
it depends on the deal they've got. So Discovery, for instance, was something which was getting shown in America weekly, so they were getting them as they were done. So it's usually, if it's an external agreement and it's being shown in another territory a week at a time. By and large, if it's their stuff, they drop it all in one. So, I mean, they bought this in, but effectively at this stage, this is their stuff. So to me, that points towards dropping one go. I take it we're just going to tackle an episode a week. We'll probably do
two episodes a week.
I got the impression that Netflix haven't just bought this season, they've actually bought the rights to the show. Yeah. So they can make more themselves if they want to.
Possibly. We'll find out on the 1st of July anyway.
Although I'm just going to put a pitch through now, because I do enjoy when we do like the episode of New Trek and a kind of like the animation.
We could do
and
that
a perfect
too.
Partner. Like, even it if they are coming all at once, it milks it out for a bit, if nothing else.
It depends how it drops and how many they are.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if they drop them all at once, we can still do
The problem is, like, if they drop 20 of them and we do it weekly, we're then going to be running into still doing it during Lower Decks. And we like to do an episode that we pull out with Lower Decks.
Yeah, we'll work it out.
Doesn't always lend itself to looking back at another episode.
We'll figure it out down the road anyway. So that's the Trek news. So before we get into the actual finale, David says greetings, David. Before we get into the actual finale, we need to ask the burning question on everybody's lips, which was, did she say the thing?
I mean, of course, if she didn't on this one, I mean, Jesus, I may often have problems with Discovery, but even they couldn't not say the thing of the last episode.
Exactly. And as predicted, we're jumping ahead, but it was the very last line of That's the right. series. And she was, said the it. Thing. So at least Discovery goes out on a high note in that regard, if nothing else. I think I was a bit hotter on this episode than the two of you, just from the preliminary conversations we've had.
It's a funny one. I think it's like very much like so you said, it's really good at the things Discovery does well and has done well, but it's also really bad at the things Discovery's done bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very funny episode.
The thing was, after this series, I guess, I mean, they've sort of, in a weird way, made their own bed here, because after this series being, for the most part, I would say better. It has kind of curbed some of the things which a lot of us complain about. The common complaints, not just on this podcast, but also outside in the fandom, there tends to be the same things people don't like about Discovery if they don't like those things. To keep it as uncontroversial as possible. And I think the problem was it did all its worst excesses in this episode, uncut, yeah. And it was really annoying. And the fact that I kind of did modulate my grading as well, because I thought, look, if I give them any benefit of the doubt, they didn't know this was going to be the last episode of the series, just of the season. If I downgrade my, you know, marking to not be a series finale, not a season finale, or whatever way around that goes, still, I think it was lacking. Still, it felt weird that the crew and the captain were separated for basically the whole thing. Still, there was the same kind of issues.
I actually thought that was something of a strength of it. I thought,
yeah, I thought it was quite good that we didn't have the captain on the ship, because we did get a lot of action on the ship.
Yeah, and so Raina we did being get awesome.
To see people. Yeah, we got to see Raina put.
But that's the sort of thing. I found myself wanting to get rid of the main storyline in favour of that. Yeah. That's not a good point. But if you're going to go into the progenitor's space, I want the whole crew to be experiencing, everyone to have a weird experience, everyone to be getting into it.
No, again, I thought that was fitting because, you know, I know many people were not happy that Discovery as a series decided to be much more focused on one character than any other version of Star Trek. But for better or worse, that's what they were doing. So it does feel appropriate that Michael has a personal journey this episode. It had to finish with her sort of.
Like the reality was that they were not going to change what they've done for 5 seasons, 7 years. For the last episode, it was always going to be a Michael-centric episode.
I think that's right in this case.
It's not my mind of being Michael-centric, but it's like if they'd had a lot of the episode, the crew being with her, like, but the crew don't even see her, like, you know. She's
no, they don't. That's true.
The Discovery. Like, I know it's the Burnham show. I get that. It's always meant to have been. I don't have a problem with that. But I would like them to have gone through the journey with her for at least half of it. And then maybe her had, you know, her face the end on her own. Because we've had Picard doing that. Like, we've had Sisko do it. You know, there isn't a problem with that. But take, like, even with Deep Space Nine, who had half a series, basically, to wrap things up, and they did a wonderful job. In that last episode, half of it is him being around the rest of the crew. Here, she's completely separate from it's everyone. Really, like, the only person he's with isn't a main crew member.
All the parts with her, and it's jumping around here, where she's with the rest of the crew, it's literally into the epilogue, which was reshoots to wrap the series up when the band had been cancelled.
Oh, my God. But when they do get them together, if they at least they have a lovely conversation and there's loads of dialogue and gore, you really feel like you do justice to ending those characters. Oh, no, sorry, wait a minute. There was things like that. We'll get there.
Yeah, well, let's go through the episode, though. So does open.
Can I start us with this? And before we even see Burnham, whoever did this opening graphic scene has watched lots of 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh, yeah.
And knows how you move to another dimension.
Yeah, there's a lot of influences all over it. And the tech, actually, like the inside of the vortex, the progenitor's tech, whatever you want to call it, it does look spectacular. Oh,
graphically, there's a lot of money has been spent on this episode because it looks visually. The entire episode looks stunning.
Which is why I think we don't see the Breen fighters until they get blown up. There's a lot of that thing DS9 did where you'd have them on the bridge describing it and see it on readouts. You know, I did get to the point where I'm thinking, where are these fighters? And I'm like, no, it's because they've spent all the money on what's this. Going on inside the vortex.
Okay.
Go on.
Oh, no, sorry. No, when we get there, I want to cover the credits specifically. So
we will.
Just let me know when we're there and I'll jump in.
Okay. So, well, we're nearly there, but I do like that it sort of opens with a kind of dictating to Discovery, like, if you can hear this. And it really reminded me of the sequence in the motion picture where Spock's going into V'ger and his little rocket pack. And he's sort of dictating back to the Enterprise. And it felt very much like that to me.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like, even if they can't hear him, they'll get his recording.
Yeah, the scene just seemed to mirror it a little bit in the way she was dictating it, and I thought that was quite nice. And obviously, Star Trek The Motion Picture owes a lot to 2001 A Space Odyssey, so there we go. So yeah, the credits then.
Okay, I mean, like, just to I watched them, of course, because the last episode, but I must admit, Discovery is the one Star Trek where usually I will skip the credits because they just irritate me. I don't want a sketch pad. I want something inspiring. I want us to be a ship going through space, ideally. I don't want a fucking sketchbook, and it's just always annoying me. But yeah. Within the confines of that, the fact they did the greatest hits of the kind of, like, bits.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was kind of nice, but just to renew my objection, really, I think their credits are horseshit. I'm sorry, just never do that again, Star Trek. Thank you, please.
Well, yeah, they
did four something... more seasons since the release Discovery, and they haven't gone back to that far.
They did
I know, I'm just like, make this a warning from
Picard season one, but I think they've learned the lesson now, I think.
Yeah, it annoyed me. Seriously, every time I couldn't get to the remote control to skip quick enough. And I love Star Trek credit sequences. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. So back with Michael then. They go to all these different planets. The first planet they go to is the Zack Snyder rain planet, because everything's in slow motion.
Right. I have issues with this.
Go on, tell us what issues you have with the Zack Snyder rain planet.
I have issues with the wind, which we can see because of the clouds in the sky blowing that way, yet she can use it to jump up a mountain that way.
Well, isn't that because the gravity's a bit weird?
No, she uses the wind.
Well, no, but isn't
the wind to start again?
Isn't the jump helped by the gravity being a bit weird?
It was a little bit silly. It was very, very silly.
Also, they're very fast and loose with these plans. So one stage, you know, I know it jumps heads a bit, but while we're talking about laws of physics or whatever, it's when at one stage Burnham takes a weapon off Mull. Chucks it. Like, I just wanted, just after she chucks it into a random planet which she doesn't know where, I just want like 5 more minutes into them like just chatting, someone to go ow, like just it just reached the bottom, just like,
yeah, or like that.
You've got cavemen suddenly going around phasing dinosaurs,
yeah, another
one gets another, like one through its skull like the phaser,
another brain jumps out with the phaser they've just found or something. But yeah, she meets Maul and gives her the dermal regenerator, which, well, it did look like she was pulling a gun on
her. I've got a problem here as well. Like, we're jumping forward a bit, but we've got, like, Michael gets out the windy planet by space magic. Space magic! So she gets out the windy planet by space magic. She walks around a bit. And then a brain starts running towards her.
Mm-hmm.
And Maul from another planet shoots her and kills the brain. And then she comes down and Michael goes on about your bleeding. She goes, well, I did kick his helmet in, which is obviously the brain she saw on the windy planet.
Yeah.
But last time we saw Maul with the brain, she was the queen of the brain. Why are there suddenly attacking her?
Yeah.
She went into there sort of on her orders. And there's no explanation why, as soon as she's gone through, they've got to be attacking her.
Maybe he's not happy that she sent him into this thing. It's like, I didn't know I were going to the Zack Snyder planet. It's horrible.
Well, there's a few of them, though, aren't there? Like, it is quite lucky that, like, Michael wandered around a bit before going into Windy Planet, and there's planets all over the place. And it is quite lucky that out of the three green, one of them's died there when Moles killed him or her, because we don't know they wear helmets. And then there's another down there as well. So you've got three of the five people who've gone in have ended up on one planet out of the millions in this bloody thing. That's some serious odds. I want to bet on that.
Although, you know, it isn't a Zack Snyder joint, because like there aren't loads of innocent civilians to get just absolutely pasted in their fight.
That's true. Yeah. And then Maul and Michael have a Matrix fight because they're sort of bouncing, or Inception might be a better anyway, they're sort of bouncing up on
working on this episode.
Gravity and everything. And yeah, but then
it's very sexy on Doctor Strange.
But then it turns into Revenge of the Sith, because they go to Mustafar and you've got all the lava and everything going. You know, Michael wins, though, because she gets the high ground. So, you know, it all works out for her in that thing. And at this point, Moll even does the superhero landing where she jumps down and she lands with the arm down and everything. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in this one. Meanwhile, Saru and Nan, I'm glad they brought Nan back for the last episode. Yeah. That's nice. And they're going to head in a shuttle to deal with the other Primarch. So that's setting up what they're going to do for the rest of the episode. Book is going to go and track to beam the portal. That's going to be his job, because Discovery needs to take care of the brain and everything. And I like the bit where Rayner sort of says, engineer, you need to find a way to stop Book irradiating to death. He just gives that out as a thing. And I've really enjoyed, like, over the last, since really Rayner started taking control, that he will just throw these things out and the crew has to come up with a way of solving it.
It's literally polar opposites from what you get with Burnham. Burnham has all this, from the very start, we're built up to believe these are some of the best people Starfleet had to offer who were on this Black Ops ship.
Mm-hmm.
Yet Michael always goes, doesn't bother to ask him after time. She just goes, this is what we're doing. This is the solution. Rayner just goes, I've got a problem. I'll speak out loud and somebody will solve it for me, because I know these people are more intelligent than me.
Yeah,
I know what I want them to do, but I don't know how to do it.
I'll also throw in this. You see, what I've realised has happened with Burnham, they've gone, right, what are Star Trek people like? They don't like, they don't want it to be like a coach, like on football or something. They want it to be someone who's kind of their friend, someone who's a guide, someone who's kind of feeling-based, someone who's all this stuff. And they've done it to the nth degree. They've made the woke monster that I believe that the right wings are scared of. They've made Burnham basically that. I feel like she's got to be, and I don't use the term woke derogatorily. I think woke is a fine thing to be. You don't want to be walking through your life sleepwalking. But she is to the nth degree. And it's almost like they've thrown in Rayner, which is more like a football coach. And I'm fucking loving him, because it's like something nice and different. And it's like him, but tempered by all the kind of like lefty people around him. It's like someone who's really right wing. But they've gone, hey, Cole, look, we love it. You've got a bit of style. You get shit done, but do it in a nice way. And that's all he needed. But he's like, as opposed to giving a big speech, he's like, cheers to the trust, let's do this thing. It's like, that's great.
Yeah, Rayner's been after five really, seasons really like, good.
I'm going to have a cry about it, then I'll tell you a plan.
And
somehow
brought,
a crying solves it.
He has brought out the best in the rest of the crew. And like I love these little scenes now where we do get these little cutaways and it's Stamets and Adira sort of bouncing ideas off each other and coming up with these solutions. And I think that works really, just, really well.
Because he's just gone, I want this to happen, make it happen. You're the clever people.
And it was so, it was very cutesy, but I don't think overly so. When they were going, Tilly was like, no, you cannot. And they all do that. It was brilliant. Yeah. So well done. Everyone gets a little part. And you know what the joke is straight away. You know that the other two are going to do exactly the same.
Yeah. And we set up, Culber's going to go with Book. So I've enjoyed the scenes we've had between them two. Like, we've not spent a lot of time developing it, but you do get this sense that they're friends and they get on really well, and they sort of share a little bit about their dilemmas and whatnot with each other. So it's nice that they stick those two characters together on this mission.
I would have had more of that, more of Rayner with Tilly as well. I think that was a really great relationship. It should have been realised way earlier on, because I think she is the window to him acting more human, and he could be the window to her kind of being a better teacher, because he's a really good teacher. He's just forgotten how. those two, if you'd hammered that relationship more, I think the end makes more sense with Tilly.
The Stamets Adira relationship works really well. How they bounce, and especially when you throw Reno into the mix as well with Fenton.
She
makes them play against each other because she gets how it's working.
Yeah, not enough Reno this episode. In fact, she's not in the main body of the episode. No. She crops up briefly at the wedding. I
think she's had her own schedule, so it's literally, you can have me for this amount of time.
Yeah.
For this episode.
It reminds me sort of like with Reno popping up. It's sort of like in American talk shows, they've always got the main guy and then they've kind of got their little Alex Horn type assistant in Taskmaster terms. And like, so one of them's got to be on all the time. The other one, which Reno gets to do and does it bloody well, is just every now and again, knows where a shot is, then just goes in with a funny line. Okay, that's me done and I'm out. Like just comes in, does two lines, steals the show, perfect. Like that's just a great little bit to have in there and it's been really well written.
Now there's a bit with Michael talking to Moll that I thought was odd. So Michael, you know, we established that Locke is in the pattern buffer, which we talked about last week. Turns out it was all a big red herring, but that's fine. It, you know, the motivation was there for the characters, so that's absolutely fine that we don't actually pay that off. That adds to the tragedy. But Michael, in trying to relate to Moll, is like, yeah, I lost someone too, but I got him back. Like, breaking up with your boyfriend for silly reasons is not the same as the love of your life getting killed.
Being killed by the person who's tried to tell you that I've gone through the same thing.
Yeah, that's it. You know, this is not the same thing, Michael. Like, I get what you're trying to do.
Like, we know Michael didn't kill Locke deliberately, but she still killed him in the fight. It was the injury
that killed him. Even if it wasn't her that killed him, still not the same thing. Like, what would she have done if Moll had have said, oh, tell me about that. Oh, well, me and my boyfriend sort of drifted out a bit because we were both being a bit silly.
Yeah.
But then we got back together. She's like, oh, yeah, that's the same. Cheers. Yeah, we're best friends now.
Also, let's just remember for later on in the episode that right here, Moll barely agrees to this. She is like really hesitant. She's really mistrustful. Only because Burnham says, right, you're just trusting me here. One-on-one, you're trusting me. I am answerable to this. And then she barely agrees. Let's just remember that for later on and see what happens.
Well, she does scum her over later. So.
I'm sure that this will have no bearing on anything that happens differently later in the episode.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly, after all that, you wouldn't just be extra careful around her. You wouldn't just maybe keep a little bit of an eye just in case those sour feelings are still bubbling up. You definitely wouldn't do that.
So then anyway, they work out that there's stuff in the negative space, and that's how you get to level two of the secret thing. Like, you've got to look at it slightly different. Anyway.
Which, again, I wonder if it'll pay off later.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get to that puzzle in a minute. But anyway, Saru tries to talk to the Primarch and he offers this trade route, and then that gives him this bit of information. I do like Saru's scenes in this episode, how he's just having none of it.
Sorry, you mean action Saru?
I mean action Saru, yeah.
Apparently that much beloved catchphrase, which has been there for all of three episodes.
Yeah, I didn't like that bit. But I do enjoy his scenes when he's like facing her down and calling her out.
There's only one reason. There's only one reason he has that nickname on Discovery. And that's because he's the only other person Burnham ever let go on an away mission with her.
That's fair.
Well, actually, you went on an away mission once.
You're forgetting about Action Book, but then he's not part of the crew. So that doesn't really matter.
It was the perfect ending. Like, I know we've got his marriage, obviously, but if we're talking about character arcs, the perfect end to Saru's story after having the Fret Ganglia and I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think his acting earlier on when they had to highlight what a pussy he was, basically. Like, there was such a big character point. Like, by the way, his species of pussies, you have to know this for what's going to happen. And he still looked really credible, really like able to command. And given that your biggest character thing is how much of a coward you are, that's such a great acting job. They had to write him really well to do that as well. Like,
And it's great but in this episode. This point
where he's an action hero, like, and fuck the action Saru name, but he, like, the way he stares her down, the look in his eyes.
Just yeah. And it's great that he says, I'm a Kelpie and my species are predators.
Yeah.
And it's true, because this is, what, 900 years later yeah. from when they made that change. So to the rest of the galaxy at this point, they will be.
Yeah.
And I know he's still got that voice inside his head, though, like that all of us have.
Yeah.
Like, things that we're scared of, or like those things we feel like we know about our personality. There's going to be that voice going, it's like, no, you're born a coward. Like, you're always going to have that with you. That's him telling that voice to fuck off at the same time. I think yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they find the terminal and the puzzle. Now, this is the easiest of all the puzzles that they've had. To say this is the final puzzle.
I'm not being funny. There's only two possible solutions to this puzzle, and there's two of them who can have a go.
Yeah, like...
All I'm thinking is, you've got the progenitor... Oh. Yeah, the progenitor lady there. You've got the Betazoid woman, I believe it was. The scientist, the Betazoid scientist anyway.
Yeah.
She comes back, she goes, right, okay, and this is the final test. They've gone through all that stuff. Yeah, those other tests of the mind sound brilliant. You really pushed what it is to be someone and to explore your mental capacity. Oh, what's this one going to be? Invert triangle. Sorry, yeah, but what do they do after they... No, that invert triangle you're in.
I mean, to be fair, if Michael...
Are we using hundreds of triangles? No, yeah. Just nine.
Just nine.
If Michael hadn't have got the clue, then you wouldn't have had a clue what to do. But with the clue, it's ridiculously easy. Well, it should have been one of them things they used to have on Krypton Factor. Like, they used to give them much harder stuff to solve.
The thing is, though, I'll even say I'm not sure I would have worked it out from that. But what I am saying is, though... Why should that be the thing that gives you the secrets to the universe? Like, that's a really dumb thing to hang it on, that they've worked that.
Do you
really
think they just couldn't be asked by this point? Like, we've done all these elaborate ones that send you all over galaxy.
I think with everything else they were doing in this episode, if you made it a really complex clue, you might take up too much of the episode solving it.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it's one of those where it had to be sort of like, right, it has to go wrong so we can kill Mole-ish.
Yeah, there has to be two solutions.
My thought is, you get it to be a thing whereby, like, this keeps it simple but complicated on another level. So you get it to be, when you get there, you're allowed to, like, basically, do you know what? You passed all these tests, you're in. You know, just go in, and then you lay down something which is corrupt about it. So it's like, you're in, but you just got to kind of take out the person in there who's, like, the last person, because it's one in, one out. Like, in some moral decision they've got to make to go in that corrupts
them. Basically, you want
and
it to be Indiana Jones.
Well, yeah, and they've got to decide not to, and when they decide not to, they're actually given the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah.
It's something like that, which tests their character, but isn't too complicated. I just thought of that on the spot, so it's probably not the best idea.
Making,
you know what I mean?
Triangles is the greatest test of character. That's a well-known...
But be honest with you, you're right. Just Indiana Jones it. Just fucking Indiana Jones, Last Crusade.
Wisely.
Yeah.
I mean, that is essentially what this is. And Maul even gets the what always happens to Indiana Jones baddies, that they don't respect the power and they get zapped. And
yeah. How pissed off would you think at the end of Last Crusade, one of the best movies ever, if they're going, and now let's play with some shapes, you know? Just.
But it's like... And this is where it comes where you were saying, like, how Muller's been so untrustworthy.
And she just whacks her.
And you get to this stage and you get there and Michael turns her back. But she's been telling Mull that, no, it's not making it into a triangle. That's not the right answer. So Malt, after the fact that Michael solved all the puzzles, goes, "You're wrong. I'll knock you out and do what I think."
Yeah.
And I would have been there, though, going, like, you know what? She looks rabid in her eyes about making it into one triangle. I'm not going to turn my back on. Like, you know, you could just see in her eyes that she was like, I'm not going to wait a single second. I'm dealing with grief. I'm not thinking logically. Like, basically, she was saying, don't turn your fucking back on me. And Burns there going, I'll trust her. It'll be fine.
Anyway. But yeah, silly as the, or easy as the actual final puzzle is, I did really like the scene with the progenitor and the stuff we find out there. Like, I liked that they threw in that the progenitors didn't make the technology, they found the technology, so we're not being presented with the ultimate creator of all of creation. Out there.
What we learned from this, because the progenitors didn't make it, we're using windows to other planets that we can step through.
Oh.
Which is Iconians.
There we go. It was the Iconians all along.
Iconians all along. I don't know, because, I mean, I like the Iconians bit now, I'm not going to lie. But I was just thinking, it's like, I wasn't sure what it did get us, having it not being like the progenitors, having it being another.
I think it's nice that it leaves some mystery out there.
Since they did the Next Gen episode, it's always, it was the progenitors who seeded the galaxy. But
which
now
they
we're
still
finding,
did.
Which they still did, but now we're finding that something else did it in the first place that probably seeded the progenitors to be there. Yeah, it makes you wonder if this is more a universe spreading species.
Yeah, I quite like
maybe
that.
Maybe sent this one to our galaxy, and there's others of these in other galaxies and all that. And I think it was sort of meant to be more metaphysical. Is that the right word?
Where
we're not going to give the answer. We're not saying it's a god.
Yeah, we're not going to show you the creator of the universe.
We're going like, right, the progenitors died out 4 billion years ago, and this technology supersedes them by billions of years, and yet we think the universe is only 14 billion years old.
Yeah.
So we're wrong on a lot of levels. There's been a lot more beforehand.
Well, I guess we're into it, something which is very sciencey, and that's the whole thing of, like, because people who are kind of creationists often can go, what was before that? Well, what was before that? And science is all about, like, things have always existed. There was always something before, or there was a kind of a state of nothingness for ages before kind of things exploded, whatever else. So it kind of is science, kind of very science literate. I guess.
It's very clever because it's sort of like playing both sides of the argument, isn't it?
And you guys have convinced me. Yeah.
And it gets to have its cake and eat it. We get to tell a story about the progenitors, but we don't write out there being something bigger and badder out there.
I don't know what she's on about.
Jodie's put mammoths all the way down. Elephants all the way down.
I think that's a reference to the Discworld, isn't it? There's something stood on top of something.
Because I think Discworld might have been, the idea about elephants might have been based on a scientific...
It's based on myth.
It's based on an Aztec, perhaps it predated Aztec, but South American sort of things where they believe that the world was on the back of a giant turtle held up by four elephants.
The one trick they did miss in this bit is it should have had the koala, should have been somewhere on the chip. That'd have been really good. While we're on the spiritual side of it, then we do get this scene with Culber, and I can only assume that this spiritual journey would have been developed more in season 6, because it doesn't really feel like an ending to it.
I don't even believe it. I mean, they might have done something else within season 6. I think they genuinely put this in, like, peppered it up through the episodes, just so at the point where Book's going off, he goes like, let me come with, I've got a feeling I might be able to help. And then at one moment he just goes, yeah, it's over there. for no reason. This. I think, well, I think Discovery saw, had that literal moment that it would... Yeah.
He tapped into Janelle's memories briefly, and maybe they were going to explore that. I mean, you could argue, if we're going to sort of invoke Tolkien, you could argue that it's an instance of eucatastrophe, that at just the right moment he pulls this memory out. Or you could argue that it's just a very convenient plot point.
It's a bit of a MacGuffin.
I mean, it just seems so Discovery to do this, to change the character, to make him spiritual just for this moment. I believe they'd be lazy enough to do that. And
They are, definitely. But
the problem with... And this is what the issue with Discovery has been all along. Because it's so Burnham-centric, the show, when you are doing this with one of the other characters, you don't spend enough time with them to develop it properly. You have them for a minute here and a minute there, and a couple of minutes here, where you should be spending half an episode with them on part of the journey and things. And that's the issue that Discovery has had all the way through. When you want to do stuff, it's like when they killed off Harry Ann, and they did that episode all about what she was like with the crew, but it was too late because we hadn't seen any of it previously.
No, that's it.
It's not like,
and they keep on referencing
it's
her.
It's a character that you've... Yeah, you've done none of it. You've done nothing to earn this. We've seen her every episode, but we've not interacted with her. We maybe heard a yes captain or a no captain, and that's it. And then you're trying to make us
disconnect.
And that's not how stories work. You've got to work to make them.
I agree, because it's been really annoying me through this series, and I picked up on again this episode. I think it's Lieutenant Asher who's at the helm. She, like, every time she delivers a line, there's always something interesting given to her line. It's not just yes, sir, no, sir. It's like always like, don't have to tell me twice. I was born to do this. Like, she sounds so interesting with everything she says. Great delivery, like, good writing around the line she does have. And it's like, I don't know who the fuck she is, though. Like, I don't know why we care. And why does she keep on looking to the person next to her to go, yep, you should do that. Jameson is the one next to her. See, I've learned the names even just to talk about this.
And maybe Jameson's the like diners.
I don't know. Well, it would be lovely to know that, wouldn't it?
Well,
wouldn't it be lovely?
But that's the issue, and that has been the issue all the way through Discovery. And we've said it many times, and that will be Discovery's legacy, that it did so little with its characters that
it
could have been so interesting. It could have been such a better show if they hadn't boxed themselves in that we are going to do a show based around one person. Because that is not how Star Trek works. It never has done.
No, I mean, not usually. And I'm not averse to doing something a bit different, but they've not done it overall as well as they could have done. But, you know.
And develop Lieutenant
Christopher. We've seen shows where it's been based on what... We have seen what shows where it's been one man and a machine. Knight Rider, prime example. Absolutely brilliant show. And we didn't need all the extra characters.
And I want them to develop Lieutenant Christopher, who, as I established last week, is the bridge gossip. He was there in the background during all this, going, it's like, and yeah, she went through to Progenitor Space. Do we get to go through there? No, we end up just fighting Breen. The cheek.
However, the way they deal with the Breen is pretty cool. Again, Raina comes up with this, right, we need to make the spore drive jump someone else and then sort it out.
Yeah, no. like before, well, beforehand when he's got the fighters coming in, he's going, I need options. Are we dead? I need options. Like, we've started with, like, the progenitor's ship, because of the damage we did, it's going to take them an hour to repair before they're coming at us. He goes, right, that's our deadline. That we have to get Michael out, our captain out of there, and be gone from here with the tech. Right, they've launched fighters at us. Right, I need an option. Right, let's stay behind this plasma field, fire photon torpedoes as they get to a certain point, someone comes up with, and that'll do it. And yeah, that's And someone else came up with the plan when he said he needed a solution.
Yeah.
And then again, he goes, I need to jump. Can we use the spark drive to jump something else? And it's, no. Yeah, we can actually. And he goes, this is what I want to happen. You lot are really, really clever. Give me a solution, and that's what we will do.
And it is cool, because we've not done anything.
Well, that's a good captain.
Yeah.
That's a good captain. He goes, right, he goes to Helm. Be evasive, don't let them shoot us. Okay. I don't need you to tell me go left, go right, go up, go down, and all that. You've told me be evasive, I can do my job.
Hey, why don't we do a Ferengi ring pull? No, yeah, none of that bullshit.
Give you a solution. You're the spark drive engineer. Give me a solution. I'll give you a solution then.
As opposed to just Book and Burnham going, it's like,
yeah, exactly.
Can we do a Bajoran rim job? No. Let's do a Kardashian house of father.
But it was cool that we got the spark drive doing something groovy that we've not seen it do before. And we got a saucer separation, which are always cool.
And I'd like to just chuck in a speech again, because like it's three lines. It's literally this that you give. And by the way, usually I'm looking forward to the Picard long speech, but they have dripped this with so many kind of Burnham speeches. When he said, if this doesn't work out, great crew, thanks for the trust. That's it. And I was it just got me so excited. I was weeping with excitement, not sadness. I was like, yeah, we're going to come. Yeah, he's going
to
do it.
Yeah, he's saying what needs to be said. He hasn't got time for a long speech. He knows he's in a dangerous situation. He hasn't got time to start crying and hug everyone and give a five-minute monologue. And
you know what the difference is?
I never realised.
Sorry. With these sequences with Rayner being the captain and getting the crew to solve the problem, it feels like the crew working together, whereas generally when Michael has solved a problem, the crew have felt like Michael's sidekicks and she's solved it, whereas they actually feel more like a crew. And when they're celebrating after this happens,
it finally feels like
an ensemble thing, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the fault with the writing, you know, that it's that we're only sort of getting this right towards the end now.
And it's literally, I don't want more Discovery, but I want another show with Rayner.
I want to see
Rayner captain in the starship.
Yeah.
I'd be quite happy for them to do. If they want to do a Discovery movie, I'd be very happy for them to fuck Michael off and Book and get the crew back.
We might get that, because we're going to find out what happens to them in the future shortly. But,
I never realised, though. I guess I just want the sports movie version of Star Trek now. I just want who's going to science it? We're going to science it! Whoa!
That would be cool. So, pretty much as we predicted right from the start of the season then, so Michael's offered the role of custodian. You can do whatever you want with the technology. No one should have it, which is the right decision. It's the Star Trek decision.
Okay.
It's very predictable.
She does try to bring Locke back and gets told,
yeah,
you can't. We can recreate his DNA, but he won't have any of his mind.
Yeah.
It'll just be a shell recreating.
And back to my point earlier, how does Moll, who has been reactive as fuck to everything, deal with that? It's like, yeah, fair enough, then let's go. Where'd that come from?
She's
going to have at least a speech to calm her down. She should have been destroyed. Because like she just impulsively did a triangle out of anger. What's she going to do when she knows for sure
she just accepts it?
She's just going to be
clearly just accepting it. Yeah.
And the whole thing of like, I mean, I think it is right that the solution was to throw this thing back in. I think it was a lovely moment when Stamets was a bit thrown by that. But the way they framed it, it just wasn't it. It was so anticlimactic. I wanted something to hang on that moat. I wanted the battle to be raging, and only by doing that did the battle end.
Yeah, and even like the log that she makes, where she goes, and we trust them that they'll bring it back if they need to. It just feels a bit flat.
By someone else, and they'll make another if they still exist.
Yeah, it was all just a little bit flat. Yeah.
Yeah, because we don't think the Iconians do still exist, so I'm not sure if they can make them. No, we don't.
True.
And Adira, I thought they were great. I think them having that speech with Stamets was a good idea.
Yeah, but
like,
that
it was kind of nothing. It was like they were just like, but like, you know, you're still good at science, so that's good, isn't it? Oh, you know, exactly what science. They didn't really say it.
They say like you found out a lot of stuff on the journey, but I suppose the tricorder readings that Michael took will probably keep Starfleet science going for a long time. And that's pretty much the action of it. Oh, we forgot to mention that Raina sends the Breen to the Galactic Barrier, which is quite good fun.
Oh, yeah.
And what's nice is that he goes, it'll take them decades to get back, but that's better than what they did to my family.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the better person. I could have just gone and jumped them into a star.
Yeah.
And even though I wish they'd built up the relationship between him and Tilly, her giving him that look at that moment, that did feel earned. That felt like they had enough scenes that she was the right person to have that reaction, you know, to be proud of him. Yeah, I like that.
I mean, if we're going to get nitpicky about it, the Galactic Barrier is not that far away because Kirk went there in the very first episode.
But they resolved that barrier. They've got a new one.
The geography of it does change. But
you resolved that barrier, you get past that, and then there was another barrier.
Oh, barrier two,
Much further past that. Yeah.
It's...
They break barriers. You know,
what's going to happen, actually?
If they don't keep on going further.
What's going to happen now is this is going to backfire. This is the Raina series. So they jump them to the Galactic Barrier. They decide we're going to go through it. The evil Breen gets Gary Mitchell'd and super god-powered and comes back for revenge on Raina.
Or you were right, and the Galactic Barrier is just like a day away or something. The Breen takes their doorway. And he goes... I wasn't doing the fucking maths. I was just on the ideas. You were the maths girl. He's going, hey, look, you said the barrier. I'd send him for the barrier. And they have
exactly like, when you said decades, it sounded really cool. We didn't want to tell you that it's actually only a week, you know.
You've given such a good, concise speech.
Depends on whereabouts on the Galactic Barrier you send them.
You
send them to the closest point of the Galactic Barrier.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which we assume is what Kirk went to. So, because we know the galaxy's on a flat plane. So I assume Kirk to get to the Galactic Barrier went upwards.
Galaxy's
like that. So I assume Kirk had to go like upwards. So it was a short distance. But if you send the Breen out on a which direction on the
So it's like send them to the Galactic Barrier.
Gamma
quadrants.
Yeah, on the x-axis, not the y. Yeah.
Not that barrier that way. The one the other direction.
Yeah, the furthest you can.
Yeah. So Book has a chat with Moll. This sort of doesn't really get resolved a lot. It's just like,
it does.
She's just like, I'm not interested, Book. Oh, well, maybe one day.
Yeah,
she's going, I want to count it.
Want to talk to you? I don't like you. I never did.
Go away.
Like that. She's not ready for the cutesy speech. The same as she wasn't ready to just give up the way she did. She's not ready for the cutesy speech of like, "Well, I still don't trust you. Maybe one day." I wouldn't count on it. They're not in that space. They're not there. When did they get there?
Though we do find out that Moll is going to be recruited by Kovic, which might be trying to set up something for Academy or maybe something for a movie. Because let's get into the big Easter eggy scene with Kovic, who we find out is not Kovic at all. He's actually everyone's favourite character from Enterprise, Daniels.
Do you know what? Me and Jim were messaging about this. How much was the guy who did the quiz at Desolation Trek last time? There was a quiz whereby there was four or five answers which were Lieutenant Daniels related. And yeah, we were like,
out of a quiz of about 15 questions.
Yeah. Who loves Daniels this much? It turns out the writers of Discovery. And it's like, do you know what? This is probably your best place to fit him in, because they have talked about the temporal wars. They've talked about the fact that Discovery skipped over time. You're talking the fact that when they ended the wars, that everyone was banned from time travel. So Daniels, if he was in the future as a time agent, would have been stuck there.
Yeah.
It kind of works very well.
It does kind of work. And it does set up potentially an interesting spin-off. I would quite like to see Daniels / Kovic in charge of a temporal agency within Starfleet, sending everyone on these Black Ops Red Directive missions.
Like the 30s after the Time War, where Daniels was from 27th century, wasn't he?
Yeah, so was it 29th?
I thought it was 29th is in my head.
Daniels was 29th, and this is 32nd, so he shouldn't still be alive, but...
No, but I reckon that he's had many lives and all that.
He does say that.
He's had many lifetimes as well, and his face has changed. Like, I don't know if you noticed as well, there was a nice... They sort of did a pan shot of his...
Oh, yeah, all the little bits and bobs and that he's like, got.
You have Cisco's baseball and
Chateau Picard. He also had a Horgon from Ricer, so he's been looking for some Jamaharon.
Mind you, there was an episode of Enterprise where he turns up, where Reed and other guy, gee whiz, I want space guy. Anyway, Mayweather, that's it, yeah. So they're on Riser, and he shows up, I believe, in that episode. Maybe?
Possibly, yeah. I think it might be from that. Is that the episode where Archer meets a lady who's got a dog, and that's the whole episode?
So I think that actually might be a specific reference to that.
It could be.
I just reckon... Between season two and three, we did do
the Temporal Cold War.
Enterprise Temporal Cold War, because that was really interesting, and Some of it was fun, but a lot of it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, my call on this
is... And we do apologise retrospectively for putting all our listeners through that.
My call is, though, that I reckon that, Daniels found himself in the 32nd century. The Accords got signed and he got stuck there. It's my kind of thing.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Doesn't make any sense.
I like to think why he's a Red Directive is partly because Starfleet's still using that way. And it also seems like you beam into his office from anywhere in the galaxy, which seems weird.
Almost
his office is in its own little pocket universe.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, consider the fact that he was saying about a Red Directive, and when they came to the future, they banned all knowledge of Discovery having jumped through time. Like, that was a plot point. So I think he would have to be a Red Directive just by existing as a time traveler.
Which is what he says, yeah.
But I would like to also throw in, though, why does Burnham ask? Because, like, I assume that isn't your real name. Let me ask you who you are. Personal, I'll have no context for who you are. Oh, I'm Daniels. It means nothing to her. And why does she ask that?
She might have quite a lot of context here, because Enterprise isn't only less than 100 years before Discovery.
But Daniels,
she'll be very clued up on the Federation starting an Enterprise with Archer. She would actually be quite clued up on their missions.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is the time travel ones were classified. They mentioned that in Enterprise. They kind of classify all the records around Daniels. She doesn't know it's Daniels when she's asking. So what I'm saying is, though, why is she asking? Why is that prompted by her?
I think the thing was, if she was weighing up, am I going to work for you and do more of these things? I want a bit more trust. I want to know what your name is. I think that was all it was.
Yeah, and I also think it's because she tried handing back that special communicator, transporter thing that she has.
Yeah.
It takes her to his pocket universe, and he tells her to keep hold of it. So it's almost like she's her own red directive because she's from the past and the captain of Discovery.
Because
the Discovery,
yeah.
I imagine, is still, even though it's been... even though a lot of people know about it in the 32nd century, I bet a lot of what happened is still red directive.
I'm sure it is, yeah.
And we've got another red directive from David, Riker to be the father of Mole Baby. Yes, because even though he's only directing, that's the power of Frakes and Riker, that he can impregnate you without the character even being there. That's how good he is with the time travel.
So wrapping up the main part of the episode, what would have been just the season finale. We do finish with the wedding, which is very nice. And Tilly's season-long arc culminates with she's realised mentorship is a good way of teaching. One-to-one teaching has been forgotten about in the 32nd century.
Where's she got that from, though? Why has she learnt that? Why is that something she's learnt this series?
Because
what is
she's
evidenced?
Because she's seen Michael and Raina bringing the best out of each other. She's worked with Adira, and she also worked with that person on the Whisper Planet. So I actually think there is evidence there that she's
like,
seen the benefits of mentorship.
I didn't feel like mentorship is something which sprung to the first thing that's put to mind for me.
It's again, it's this thing where we know that we've got Starfleet Academy coming up. We're pretty certain Tilly is the main character in it. And they're literally just shoehorning her in. And it's like, yeah, we're going to say. And it's down to Discovery's bad writing again, which we've already said. We say people have developed these traits or these actions or these characteristics without putting the groundwork in. We do a little 30 seconds, a minute here.
I think that's you can see that she's seen the benefits of mentorship. But what I don't understand is why this hasn't occurred to her. Like, if you read any book about teaching, it will mention the benefits of one-on-one teaching. It's just a really silly
thing to realise. The whole thing which she came back on the Discovery with was, I feel like I am not connecting with my pupils. How does this solve? Again, it just seems like, oh yeah, we'll just chuck in that it's about mentorship. It just seems it felt forced. It didn't feel organic. It didn't feel like that was the lesson. Like, I want it to be the lesson you had to get from that stuff. It's like when she says mentorship, I want to go, oh my God, of course, all that has been about mentorship. And it didn't.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's done that well, but I think it's done better than like Culber's spiritual journey, for example.
Anything is. But David, by the way, I've seen your comment. We're going to get to that in a minute.
Yeah, we're going to get to
that.
Yeah,
we're going to get to that. We're off to do the epilogues.
Then here's the biggest surprise of the episode. Book and Michael still love each other and they get back together.
The biggest surprise of the episode is still to come.
The biggest surprise thus far is that in a line, Admiral Silver Daddy Bear, I'm just going to call him Vance one time just to give him his proper name, but we know his real proper name is Admiral Silver Daddy Bear. ASDB is there, and he's like, he congratulates them on the wedding, goes, President and Ambassador. Admiral.
Yeah, so Saru's been promoted to Admiral, which is
this makes
cool.
sense. This makes sense because he's not an ambassador from a planet. He's an ambassador from Starfleet, so they're giving him a rank within Starfleet.
No, I'm happy with that.
It. And it
I
makes
love
sense.
It. And he makes a perfect admiral. I think he's a slightly better admiral than captain just because he is very cerebral, very good at politics, I think, very good at working with people in that particular way. I just kind of, it seems a bit weird. We just have it announced in that line, not like.
Yeah, that was a very throwaway.
I almost wonder if they put that in like ADR after the fact and thought, well, we'll just, now that we know it's the end, we'll just throw that out as an extra little Easter egg. I don't know. And that's just speculation.
And also a lovely little moment between Tilly and Raina, just like, you know, it's like, well, She first of all again references the relationship which Michael had with robot girl
Arium.
And like, oh, it's like that relationship. What, the one which we never saw? Okay, we'll ignore that. But like, he goes, because one of you is like a crabby, it's like that, but with more crabbiness. And he goes, and like, just as they're panning away, he goes, like, here's the crabby.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then Michael gets a call from Kovach.
Yeah.
And she goes to Book, hey, do you want to come along? Like, so you've joined the super secret temporal red directive. Section 31 Black Ops Agency. And you're going to turn up and go, brought my boyfriend, is that all right?
By the way, I just skipped up on my best friend's wedding because fuck
yeah,
that.
And he's all right. He's my boyfriend, he's fine. He didn't know all this secret. His name's Daniels, by the way, Book, yeah?
I've got a feeling.
You told me five times on the way here his name's Daniels.
When he's let her join, realizes that this is going to happen with Book. He's already seen.
He's been watching the show.
Yeah, well, he's been looking at logs and he's gone, what is fucking wrong with her? She's got this specialized crew and she goes on every fucking away mission with her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Maybe he wanted Book to be part of it anyway, and he's like, oh, well, I better have Michael as well, I suppose. anyway, so that's where the season would have ended. But then we get this coda
addition
with older Michael, and she's still got Giorgio's telescope, which I thought was a nice little touch. They're on the planet that they took the space, whatever it was, space whale thing to.
Here's the bit which confused me. So, right, so Book comes on with this thing in his hand.
This is the biggest surprise in the episode.
So they talk about the beehive. I'll just set it up and then maybe you can explain what's happening then. Because there's like this little maybe hexagonal thing he puts into a coffee because she says something about the foam. He puts it on the top.
No,
then it stinks, and then she goes, it's wax in my coffee now.
Well, what he says, he goes, I've got a surprise for you. Mm-hmm. This is the first room, which, whatever the name of the planet is, bees. From the space bees, this is the first honey.
Yep.
And he's put it into he's made a nice little box out of the space bees wax, all fancy. And this is the massive surprise of the episode. When you put a wax box that's got the honey inside, into your coffee, instead of opening it to pour the wax out like you should do, what's going to happen is the wax will melt into your coffee and make it taste shit.
So wait a minute, that all happened. I assumed it was meant to magically open and like release the honey and fly off or something. Is he just, he's that dumb?
Yes, I think he's that dumb.
I think that's what we have.
He's made a wax box out of the space bee honey and put space bee honey in it, and then doesn't understand that you're meant to open the box.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if it's because it's space bee wax, if it was maybe meant to fly off.
Or if it was meant to be lighter, it was meant to just nestle on top or something.
Well, put a coating of space bee wax on top.
Melt. Maybe it's not meant to melt.
Oh, it's meant to just open and let the honey out.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's why I kind of assumed it was meant to be.
I've no idea.
Just weird because what I took from this was he put a block of wax filled with honey in a coffee and was surprised when the wax and honey melted into the coffee instead of just the honey.
Yeah, it was odd.
All I'm saying is it's no future budgie alarm clock for inventions.
I think the joke was that he thought that something magical was going to happen with the wax and the honey was off to come out and flavour a coffee really nice. But nothing magical happened.
It all went wrong.
This meant to be a device we were somehow familiar with.
And Michael did sort of like, get that he expected something else to happen because she did ask him, are you sad? when he
maybe
when
Brooks
he just
always sang. Doing stuff like this, like he turns up yeah, and goes, "Hey, yeah. Michael, look at this," and he just flings something at the window. He's like, "Oh, it didn't do what I want." Book, you've just covered the window in a load of shit. Like, no, it was meant to turn into a butterfly. I don't know. Yes, yeah, okay,
yeah,
but you go sit
this,
down.
It does do this regular, and Michael's just got used to it.
He's just got totally just used to him, just doing random stuff.
It just goes.
Like, hey, Michael, look, watch this, and he throws the dog out the window.
And
like...
what's bizarre, to humour him, she goes, it might still taste nice.
Yeah.
So she takes a drink, and it's absolutely disgusting. You can tell by the look on her face. And then she carries on drinking it. It's like, what's up with you? You've just coated your insides in wax, you idiot.
The thing is for me, like, because I was thinking, it's like, okay, look, they've actually written a really nice character. I like the kind of interaction between them. I love the fact she triggers, like, no, this tastes awful. Like, and like, oh, you're never going on a mission with me again after this. I thought, oh, it's really
right, you
cute.
Totally are, because no one else
makeup
ever does.
Looks great. I think, oh, this is so great. But I've obviously just not understood what that wax thing is. That's on me. Yeah. And now I hear that, like, of course, in true Discovery fashion, it's a great scene fucked up by one thing which makes no...
No, it's Buck. He's just gone mad. Like, he runs in and he goes, hey, Michael, watch this. And he pisses on an electric socket. Like, oh, yeah. What did you think were going to happen, Buck? Oh, I thought it were going to be lovely. Anyway, so she's still got the telescope. They've got, there's a lot of like little callbacks, like they've got a cute deer thing that's called Alice, so that takes us back to the Alice in Wonderland. They've got a Federation emblem in the garden, and the shuttle sort of flies up to it like the Shenzhou did in the very first episode.
Yeah. And the shuttle's obviously a nod to the Orville for some reason, because it's one of the Orville shuttle
crafts. Very much so.
Yeah. I don't know why, but it is.
They took the opportunity for some more merchandising and came out with a new Starfleet uniform.
I was going to say,
new uniform. Yeah.
But I thought it was great because it's like...
I like it,
things,
but...
Two things. One is, like, I just like the look of it. Secondly, I wondered if this was a purposeful nod because, like, I'm extrapolating some things, so, like, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm figuring as the first female black captain who's leading a Star Trek show... She was probably hugely inspired, like as a lot of us were just generally by Nichelle Nichols. But like, as you understand, I thought that uniform was very true to the original uniforms, very reminiscent of the miniskirts from that, but with trousers, so you're not being exploitative. But it seemed like a nod to Nichelle Nichols.
It also had the gold from the Mirror Universe, which we took as being the most heaviest Nichelle Nichols episode from original season.
Yeah,
that's
a
really
good
point. I just wonder if like that seemed like somehow not to now again.
Maybe.
I just thought it was a blatant marketing tactic to get another uniform.
Oh yeah, it's another uniform.
I love the fact they went classic.
Because it's not like us Trek fans don't buy different uniforms.
Very true.
Yeah, it's so exploitative. I'm going to buy three.
The man with three hanging in his wardrobe. And that's after I've had to throw away one.
And
yeah,
then
I thought it looked great. I really enjoyed that uniform, the badge.
It was a good uniform.
Badge. It's a nice uniform. I'm not sure if I'm going to buy one, but
no,
I'm going to buy one.
I'm expecting to see at least one at Destination Trek.
Probably.
Yeah.
Then she has a chat with the son on the shuttle and he asks her, like, what would you have said if you were asked that question again? And apparently this line, like what she says about maybe life itself is the important thing. And apparently that was meant to be earlier in the episode. And they decided when they were doing this coda, we'll actually bring that forward so that it wraps up kind of the series rather than the episode. So I thought that worked really well.
Yeah.
We get back to Discovery, and now we thought we'd got the answer to Calypso-ish in that time travel episode, but
yeah,
I was quite surprised that they actually went there with this. And yeah, that was David's question earlier.
It was, and we did recognize it, but we were coming to it.
And yeah, so we even see them, they've retrofitted it, they've taken it back to the original design, they've got rid of the air. Well, we don't know because it's a red directive.
The only thing I can think of, well, I thought the red directive, right, the way I pieced together is this. I assume the red directive was because Burnham saw it when she went to the future, so that has to happen for everything to work
out. No, I think this is something else.
This was my take. Then you can tell me your thing. I thought it was that. And the only thing I can reason why they had to retrofit it to look like the old school one was because Burnham, when she was on there, it looked like that. Now, it doesn't explain outside of the episode why you need it to look like the original, other than it felt like, well, yeah, we're going to wrap things up, so we have to make Calypso make sense, because apparently the sixth series was going to deal with the Calypso.
Yeah, it was going to lead up to
Calypso. I feel like they felt on about to do it in this little coda, but I just thought, is that really the thing we care the most about in all of this?
No, I don't think it is.
I thought it was nice that they acknowledged the short trek instead of going, we've retconned it, it never happened, right? The very last scene, we are going to acknowledge the short trek happened, and that's how it's going to go out.
And it's a nice little hook that they could pick up in the future. The reason I don't think it's because she saw it in the future is that we've established that was an alternate timeline where the Breen had destroyed Starfleet, so that wasn't the Calypso timeline, whereas what they're doing now is leaving it. I mean, I suppose it's conceivable that Daniel / Kovic knows about the events of Calypso because at some point he's been further forward.
No, you're
so
wrong.
He's,
at some point, Daniels has come back and he watched Short Treks in 2020 and he knows he's got...
There we go. Yeah, that's it.
And I mean, for me as well, it's like the way Burnham tries to like spin it as a positive, because Zara's going, it's like,
yeah, Zara's like,
I'm going to spend like lifetimes on my own. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Well, you should feel fucking awful because they're treating you like shit. Just spoilers, Zara.
Yeah.
But then she goes like, yeah, but then you get to come back and meet us all anew. It's like, what? Humans are the biggest fucking, like, you're treating them like shit,
Zara,
and then expecting you to be thankful to humans for it. Starfleet, I should say, not
now,
humans. Don't mean to be
it's
racist.
Okay, Zara. You're not going to go insane and just end up watching old movies over and over again.
Then you get to see more of us, who'll probably do the shit to you all over again, because we feel like it. There's no reason for us to be doing this, do you? Other than Red Directive.
Well, there is, but we don't know what it is. Yeah, when we get Star Trek Red Directive, the series.
But that's the thing.
It's maybe setting up that we're going to get some individual episodes to maybe wrap up some stories that...
Maybe, yeah, I would
we're
like...
No, they won't have done that.
I would like a follow-up set in the Calypso timeline, find out who Kraft was.
They're going to give it to
us. When you're doing so much with CGI in shows now, they're doing uniform changes almost every season, etc., it'd be very easy to do seasons of this, which is what Discovery was talked about being originally an anthology.
It was
series.
Originally, yeah.
I mean, I'd love it. I think they just haven't thought it out. They've gone, let's call it Red Direct. Again, the only kind of thing I could position is that because Burnham, even though timeline has changed, she was in the future and this had happened to Discovery. So for some reason, they feel like they've got to honour that plot.
I think it'll be something else because it was going to be the season 6 arc plot. So anyway, let's briefly...
Before you fly, did you want a reminder about the end credits?
What about the end credits, David? Have we missed something?
I think we have.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's been the opening credits, which I really hate. Not the end credit. Sorry, is it because I said when we get to the credits, I meant the opening credits, which are all shit, because they just see through a sketchbook as opposed to flying through space, which is what I come to Star Trek for.
But we've got
something else to take care of.
I only want to very briefly talk about this because it annoyed me. The Titanic dream sequence on the bridge, I just thought it was awful. Just how they're all just like laughing. Just so horrible and forced. And that was everything that's been wrong with Discovery in a nutshell. And I just hated it. It was meant to be really moving. It was meant to be like that montage in DS9. And it wasn't. It was just cringeworthy. It was awful.
Well, first of all, I think what they should have done is one of two things. And I think the first one they didn't do for a reason. I think they should have just had all the crew members coming onto the bridge, ad-libbing a line so you get something really fresh, like they don't have to write anything, but ad-libbing a line for Michael to react to as if they've just come to see off the Discovery along with her. Lovely characterful moment. You get them all together. They all get something for her to play off. They do have a nice little hug. Fine. That would have been nice. But I think they probably didn't do that because then you've got age makeup and you've got to do all the uniforms, which they do actually count every penny when it comes to that stuff. But when they do go, like, and if you're not going to do that, I wish they kind of instead just done, it's like she goes, you know what, Zora, this reminds me of the last time we were all here together. Flashback, show them on the bridge, like in the uniforms they've already got.
Yeah, so that'd have been fine. Concerns.
But it's like, as it was, like when she hugged Saru, I thought, oh, Saru got there and she's picturing him young, because it felt like...
It kind of looked like that at first. They made it look like he was there.
That's what I got originally.
But then it's like, no, it's this awful dream sequence where everybody's falling over laughing. And no, it was just terrible.
Reno, who just doesn't react like that. She's suddenly laughing and laughing. That's not her.
I did not care for her.
Lieutenant Christopher was hugging her going, it's like... And then apparently we all just meant to hug. I don't know what the hell that was. I mean, I just came here for a reunion, creepy much. And you got obviously Colbert in his own time zone away from everyone else. Like, there would be no reason why he isn't with his family. Like, I know they filmed this bit later, and fair play. Look, I don't begrudge him being made a part of it. It's just so jarring the way that he wasn't stood with his family. Like,
and when you look at when it shows him going in Tugger and it's clearly a body double who looks nothing like Wilson Cruz, it's anyway, and then we do actually get a nice shot of Discovery. The final shot of the series is a hero shot of the ship, which we've been asking for since season one.
I mean, I'll only give them the Discovery is the one ship we actually saw during the show, so they didn't give us anything totally new.
No, but they gave us a really nice shot.
It was a nice shot, though. You're right.
And the last line, obviously, is what we were all waiting for. And they delivered. And she says, let's fly. Which it had to be the way they ended it. I don't know if they know that it's funny. But it was, the way we've built it up this series while we've been covering it, if it had ended any other way, I'd have been so annoyed. And the fact that they did it.
And I'll give you, like, they have done such Stockholm Syndrome on us. We started hating Let's Fly, then we were mocking it, and somewhere along the lines... we started to love the fucking thing. I was so excited. And like, I was already laughing so hard because I was like, wait a minute, has this whole 5-year adventure just been about the Calypso timeline? Is that all this has been about? Like, that did make me laugh a little bit, the fact that was all leading to that. But then, when she said, let's fly, I just,
I was edge of my seat. I was like, she's got to say it. She's got
to
say it.
I do want to answer David's question, though. Yeah. What did you guys think of the ship getting mothballed? And I think it's a rotten way to treat her.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, true. But we don't know. The Discovery will have more adventures, another 900 years in the future.
I was about to say, she was on her own for nearly 1,000 years when Kraft found.
Exactly. So we're in the 40th century, 41st century 41st. Or whatever.
And then they had that whole plot line where they established, because she's a sentient being, she should have ultimate control over Discovery. No one answering to her. She's that powerful. She's that smart. But then the second they've got the opportunity, it's like,
she's been away for a thousand years. Obviously
no worries, she
obviously
agreed to bad hands.
She must have agreed to it.
She didn't agree to it because she was told that she was being sent off and left.
Yep. It's shitty.
Weird one.
And she's meant to be glad that she gets to return to the species.
Exactly. She gets to meet Kraft.
I hope she comes back rageful and destroys the Earth. I'm that much
in her. She teams up with the Breen, who's got the Gary Mitchell powers.
Well, Calypso looks like everything's proper. Calypso, we got the impression everything had gone to absolute shit.
We did.
And maybe she's meant to go save it all again.
But we also don't know where she is. Like, we don't know if she's in our part of the galaxy or another, or even in our galaxy.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will probably never find out, but who knows? So that is a wrap on Star Trek Discovery.
Are we doing a wrap-up one next week?
We will do a wrap-up episode where we talk about the series as a whole and kind of rank the seasons.
Good, because I'm watching season four and I'm not doing that for nothing. I'm not watching season four again for no reason.
But in terms of new Discovery, that is a wrap on all of that. So that is the first of the new Trek shows.
Second, yeah, we had Picard.
No, I mean, as in, it was the first one of the new Trek shows. Right. Yep. And it's now done, so the end of an era in a lot of ways. But we will be back to talk about it in full. And, have you been making notes of all the Let's Flies while you've been watching? You should do that, and then we can make, like, a super cut. But anyway... we will be back to talk about that. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're at RetrekPod. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. You can follow us on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
Which I have a new styrene addiction that I decided to embrace while I was away at the weekend.
Oh,
so I build a Gunpla now. So I built this Monday, Tuesday this week. I did put a video out Monday, sort of showing what I was off to start doing, and there'll be more videos because that's now going to get ripped back apart for painting.
And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, like you don't know, these two damn fine gents joined me this week, as per with the Doctor Who episodes, which we've been doing on Gallifrey Stands, which is an offshoot of Dr. Squee show. We've been talking about this week on Monday, they're generally coming out, and we were talking about Dot and Bubble this week, which the gents joined me for. Seemed fitting where we were doing the last episode of Discovery this week to sort of cross-promote. And it was a bloody good episode, it's got to be said. I'm really looking forward to the next one. Then someone else will join me for that who is still to be determined. So... Join me fantastic. Monday, Sunday, something like that. It's a bit loosey-goosey when we're doing Doctor Who. That's like...
Yeah. And for possibly the last time, let's fly.
Let's fly.
Let's dragonfly.